Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer at WNYC, and don't forget, you can sign up for our daily podcast if you can't hear the show on the radio or prefer to get it through digital media. It is free, and you can hear the program at your convenience on your computer or portable device. Sign up for the podcast at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Now, a judge in a White Plains foreclosure case has thrown out the whole mortgage. This is a $460,000 mortgage because the bank can't prove ownership. Will the case set a precedent? New York Times business columnist Gretchen Morgenson wrote this up in Sunday's paper. She's here with the lawyer representing the homeowner who was being foreclosed upon. The lawyer is David Shav. Hi, Gretchen. Welcome back.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Good. And Mr. Shav, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Mr. Shav, tell us about your client and what happened in this case.
Basically, my client fell behind on her mortgage together with her daughter. Family lives in the house. We filed a Chapter 13 bankruptcy to catch up on approximately $33,000 in mortgage arrears, and more importantly, to start what's called loss mitigation, which is an attempt to modify the mortgage in the bankruptcy.
So you were going out for mortgage modification to ease the terms a little bit. Did you have any idea that the judge might void the whole mortgage?
Well, we certainly knew that the paperwork and the proof of claim was improper. I've been dealing with these issues for a while now in this type of setting. When we saw no movement on the part of the modification, I brought the objection to claim.
Gretchen, do you understand the law by which a judge can throw out the underlying mortgage and not just the foreclosure claim?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm not a lawyer and I don't play one on television, but I do know that you have to be able to prove standing if you are going to try to take someone's house away from them. And so the idea that a bank or an institution or a representative of that institution cannot do so, I think is something that judges are beginning to awaken to and say, wait a minute, if you can't prove that the house can be taken away, then really, why should you be allowed to do so?
And Gretchen, are many banks unable to prove ownership of the loan now because the loans have been securitized into inscrutable derivatives?
Well, what happens now, I think, is interesting because for years the practice among judges was to rubber stamp this kind of paperwork that was very dubious and questionable by the representatives for institutions. Lawyers would, attest or sign affidavits that said that they knew who owned the note or the underlying mortgage and that they were attesting that this bank was, in fact, the owner without showing the, proper paperwork that is needed and the assignment of the mortgage, for instance. And so now we're starting to see judges question that. And when you have just an attorney for the institution saying, yes, I'm attesting to it, that's simply not enough. And it's high time that we do understand whether or not these banks are, in fact, the true owner of these notes.
So, listeners, anyone else going through foreclosure with a bank not able to prove ownership, call us up and tell us your stories. Maybe get some free legal advice from David Shav. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Lawyers, bankers, you're welcome to call in, too. What do you think about this? 212-433-9692. And David Shav, where does this case fit into the context of your practice? Are foreclosures still rampant in Westchester? Are more and more banks unable to prove ownership of the loan?
Absolutely. I think it's the exception when I find a proof of claim that I could not object to. There are cases where we choose not to. We're surrendering the property, have no interest in it, perhaps. But most of the paperwork is pretty much garbage that they're submitting to the court right now.
How long have you been a bankruptcy lawyer?
Oh, boy. I've been a bankruptcy lawyer since predominantly since 1981. Exclusively, I would say at least 15 years.
Yeah. So how new is it that the banks are unable to produce the paperwork?
Well, it's probably been going on for a long time. We've caught on to it in the last 2 to 3 years and have brought this issue in the last year or so. And you have to bring the courts along slowly on something like this. They have always taken for granted that documents submitted by the banks are true. If they say a client owes money, the client owes money. And it takes a long time for these judges to come around to realize that everything that the bank submits is not necessarily gold.
And do you think that this is on the rise because banks started engaging in all this mortgage selling and securitization of mortgages, and that ironically the same practices that the banks engaged in that helped bring down the economy are now kind of coming back to haunt the banks because they don't even know who owns their own mortgages?
Well, it's not only not knowing who owns it, they're unwilling to prove it, they're unwilling to do the extreme documentation necessary to show all the transfers, receipts, actual sales. In the securitization process, they have to follow a pooling and servicing agreement within the trust that's very detailed and requires that they show actual transfers, actual receipts. For a foreclosure mill, an attorney locally, to produce those documents, they don't have them. And they rely on others to get those documents for them, and we've never seen them to date.
What's a foreclosure mill?
Foreclosure mill are the large firms locally who are, by contract, given the foreclosures in the neighborhood, so to speak, as well as the Chapter 13 bankruptcies. Whenever there's a mortgage involved, they go to pretty much 3 to 4 of the same firms.
You think they're shaking in their boots as a result of this ruling?
I'm not sure they understand the ruling.
Do you understand the ruling?
I certainly understand it, and I think the regional attorneys, the law firms that give out these contracts, understand it. But the local attorneys sort of scratch their heads and say, well, you know, so there's an assignment that's not proper, so there might be an improper documentation. There might be a bogus document. What's the big deal?
So Frank in Brunswick is not so sure. Frank in North Brunswick, you're on WNYC. Hi, Frank.
I'd first like to contradict what Ms. Morgenstern said, that there's little doubt that the banks have legitimate title to these mortgages. But even moving forward, this isn't a viable solution. As she noted in her paper, this clouds the title of the property and makes subsequent transfers very difficult. And finally, it's only a matter of time before the documentation is forthcoming. I'm sure that a lot of people are scrambling right now to come up with it. I'll take my answer offline.
Thank you for your call. Gretchen, go ahead.
They had 7 months to produce the documents and haven't done it yet.
That's in your particular case. But Gretchen, the larger point that the caller is making is that this may feel good at a moment when we're all angry at the banks and feel bad for people being foreclosed upon when they may have been, you know, goaded into mortgages with terms that were not really sustainable. But ultimately, we actually do know who owns these mortgages, and these paperwork packets are going to surface.
Well, we hope so, because ultimately then it will be a complete unknown, and we would have this, as you say, clouded title forever. We do have to find out who owns it, but I am not so certain that all of the I's have been dotted and T's crossed, and I think that is what this illustrates. Is the sort of rush for profits that Wall Street and the banks ran to you know, fail to do the sort of basic legwork that was necessary and the paperwork that was required when they were throwing all of these loans into these pools. And I just think that we're finally coming to a point where some judges are questioning it, and it will have a good result in that in the future they will not be able to do this anymore. They will have to cross the T's and dot the I's. And when you are talking about taking someone's home away from them, I think that is imperative. That is the lesson of this ruling.
We're talking about a ruling in a White Plains foreclosure case in which paperwork was not produced proving that the bank owned the mortgage because the mortgage was sold and securitized or some such thing. And the judge not only prevented the home from being foreclosed upon. He threw out the entire $400,000 plus remaining mortgage. And we're talking about it with Gretchen Morgenson, New York Times business columnist, who wrote it up in Sunday's paper, and David Shav, the attorney for the homeowner. And Sheila in Montclair has a story. Hi, Sheila.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
We've been trying to take care of a loan modification with Chase since last November. They've lost our papers 5 times. They're scaring us by sending pre-foreclosure letters. We finally got a lawyer, and their answer is that the payments are not being made by Chase directly. Chase is a third party for our investor, which we cannot find the name. And we are afraid of what could happen to our mortgage. And we're not getting any answer from anybody from Chase.
If I may, Chase is the servicer of your loan, and it was probably securitized with MERS, Mortgage Electronic Registration System. That's to shield who the real investor is. Without knowing who the owner of the actual, who the beneficiary of the note is, you can never modify the loan. And this is what's happening to people outside a bankruptcy court. And this is why when they had the judicial modification legislation in February, I believe it was, of this year, when the Senate voted it down, we lost the ability to really push modifications in this country.
So do you advise that Sheila's lawyer try the same thing that you did in the White Plains case and say, look, if you can't find who owns the mortgage, if you can't produce it in court, then not only shouldn't the home be foreclosed upon, but the entire mortgage should be canceled?
You can absolutely attack a foreclosure in state court on standing issues if just a servicer files the claim as opposed to the beneficiary of the note, which is probably a trust. There is someone who has a right on that mortgage, and they're the parties that have to appear in court. Whether or not she qualifies for a Chapter 13 bankruptcy is a different matter. But you can fight these in state court also.
Sheila, it sounds like you have a new weapon.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. But Gretchen Morgenson, why should it go to that extra step? In other words, if there's a foreclosure proceeding because the homeowner is failing to pay the mortgage, why should the judge not just keep the homeowner in the home until they can figure out who actually owns that debt and cancel the mortgage? Why is it right, in your opinion, if you think it's right, to take that extra step and cancel the entire mortgage?
Well, I'm not saying that it's right or wrong. Really, what I'm pointing out is that this is an outgrowth of this, slapdash approach to recording and assignment of mortgages that was characterized the mortgage mania, and that certainly was the problem in many securitizations. So, right or wrong is really of no concern to me. I think it's just a very good story that illustrates how judges are starting to respond to this and say that this documentation or this alleged paperwork that some of these lawyers produce is just insufficient to take someone's home away from them. I think that's really the lesson here. And it really you have to wonder how many people's homes have been taken away from them with this kind of paperwork in place.
Brian, can I make one correction just so
sure.
the public isn't, there's no misconception
Absolutely.
Here. The judge did not cancel this mortgage. The judge expunged, wiped out the entire mortgage claim in the bankruptcy setting. They could not collect in this bankruptcy. They could not collect the arrears. That does not change the fact that somewhere out there is a mortgage that has to be dealt with. And we are hopefully taking the next steps to try to get to that point.
So what
happens?
What happens when the mortgage surfaces?
Well, first of all, this matter has been appealed. Whether or not that appeal is going forward, we don't know, but it has been appealed. We are going to be taking further steps in the bankruptcy setting to amend the client's plan in bankruptcy to attempt to deal with the mortgage that may be out there and the county registrar, that type of thing. We're trying to bring this matter to a further head and get additional rulings in this court. Whether we're successful or not, waits to be seen.
And just to be clear on what the language means, Gretchen, when you wrote, the mortgage debt disappeared via a court order, that means exactly what?
That means what he said, which is that it was expunged, that this creditor could not collect on it, and that we now have to go back to see if a true owner can be produced. Now, one of the problems that this law firm has that was representing the lender in this case or is that now they'll come back and say, oh, well, here's the documentation. Well, why didn't you file it before?
That's exactly what's going on in these cases, where they are filing claims, I attack the claim, and then they come in with new documentation or new assignments. Why didn't you produce these documents when first asked? And they contradict each other.
I think also, Brian, you have to remember that the United States trustee has inserted itself into this proceeding, which also tells you that it is unusual and of great interest. The United States trustee is the Department of Justice's unit that oversees the bankruptcy court system in this country, and they don't just enter into these cases lightly. When they enter into a case and when they make themselves an interested party in a case, it's because they feel that there's something important going on in that case. And it could be that they believe that there's an abuse of the bankruptcy system going on.
So, Gretchen, in our last minute, is there a policy issue here, too? I mean, the bailouts of banks and other companies continue. GMAC is going back for a third scoop of taxpayer money now. But is the government bailing out homeowners, regular folks who got caught up in the madness, by policy that would allow the, the restructuring of loans, or are they just small enough to fail?
I think that they're trying. That certainly is what they're spinning us on. The Treasury Department spinning us on the idea that that they are really helping to modify loans. But the fact of the matter is that if you can't find out who owns the note, you can't modify it. And so I think that this is a very big part of why we are not seeing more loan modifications going on. It's too complicated. They can't find out who is the proper person to negotiate with. It's very, very complex, and that, I think, is a central reason why the number of modifications we've seen is so small.
And the modifications are, many of them are actually garbage. They're trial modifications. They're not going anywhere.
Bankruptcy lawyer David Shav, New York Times business columnist Gretchen Morgenson. Fascinating case with perhaps precedents being set. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and coming up in just a minute, we will meet another inductee into the City Law People's Hall of Fame. Today, it is Anna Malkima, it's Margarita Kagan, who for decades has helped to settle Soviet Jewish immigrants to Brooklyn. Stay with us.